This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yik. It's Friday afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House segment with my co-host, consultant, urologist, Dr. George Lee, joining me in the studio. Hi, George. How are you doing?
I'm good. I am excited. I think, you know, if you are out there at the moment, Xiao Yik, you can feel the excitement in the city because obviously we got the, holidays coming up,
midweek,
Merdeka Day. And then I think, the traffic is building up. There are a lot of people either coming in or getting out of the city. And also in the spirit of Merdeka, I think, we really ought to do something just to talk about mental health of the country and also these sort of like mental well-being, right?
Yes. And our topic today is it's very heavy, but it's a very meaningful one. It's something that perhaps all of you listening have some experience with as well. So we would love to hear from you as we go along in the show. We'll be talking about bullying, a bit more specifically, workplace bullying among adults. I know we talk about bullying among school children quite a fair bit. Bullying does happen in the workplace between adults as well. This is sort of coming off the back of the task force, the Healthcare Work Culture Improvement Task Force, which was set up by Minister of Health, Khairi Jamaluddin. And this task force released its report last week, where they did review the Ministry of Health's work culture. And one of their findings was that bullying does occur among Ministry of Health staff, and not only to house officers, which is something I think we do hear about quite a lot, but also across all levels of staff within the ministry, across the healthcare facilities as well, not just limited to one particular hospital. So today we'll be trying to unpack, not specifically the report, but rather we're looking broadly at the psychology behind bullying in the workplace. And we have helping us to understand organizational behavior, associate professor in psychology from Help University, Dr. Eugene T. So we hope to be able to understand things like, why do these behaviors persist? Why are they allowed to persist? You know, is it easy to identify when somebody is being bullied or bullying someone? Of course, the mental health impact on victims, how organizations can prevent bullying in the workplace. Like I said, if you have some experience with this, call us at 03-7733-2900 to share your experience. You can also WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. George, I do want to ask you first, though.
Oh, dear.
You knew that was coming.
Oh, dear.
You know, as somebody in the healthcare workforce,
yes,
where accusations of bullying are usually quite rampant. A lot of anecdotal evidence. What's your experience been?
Well, as you know, I've been in healthcare for at least 25 years and things changing. However, I don't think it's changing fast enough. I mean, dating back to when I first kind of like joined medical school in 1990, probably before you were born. And then during that time, and obviously as a medical student, you are really the lowest of the pecking order. And the whole system is very hierarchical. And then obviously, you know, you have the top consultants and then everybody just need to follow orders. And then whenever things are not done properly, you get that sort of public humiliations. And all these were perceived to be character building, toughening up somebody. So at the end of the day, you built enough thick skin so that you can handle everything and you're toughened up to be a doctor. And of course, that sort of system has been around for decades and decades and centuries in many, many medical schools and many cultures. However, the sad fact about this is that obviously, you know, to survive that sort of like environment is very toxic and may not be so pleasant for somebody. So if you survive it, it might leave some psychological scars. However, if you don't survive it, the consequence of that will be detrimental. So that's what I see all the time. And I say things are changing and then there are more and more avenues for somebody to, in air quotes, fight back and also, you know, whistleblow and that sort of things. However, it's just probably not changing fast enough.
And Eugene, I'd like to turn to you now for something, I guess, if we could try to define what we're looking at. And I think a couple of things that we could unpack from George's sharing as well, isn't it? The culture, the hierarchical kind of order in certain professions. In medicine, I think it's very clear. Perhaps in armed forces, in the military, you'd probably see that as well. Perhaps you could help us unpack that idea of, first of all, what would be considered bullying behavior, right? Is a reprimand bullying behavior, for instance? And what do these kinds of hierarchies and power dynamics have to do with it?
Yep, absolutely. So thank you for having me. Good to see you again, George, Shariq. So I think for starters, you know, just to build on George's sharing of his experiences, I think it's important, right, to distinguish what bullying is from, like what you said, Shariq, you know, harassment or, you know, receiving harsh, maybe even unfair, unjust criticism. So what we do know from the literature and from the research is that bullying is, and I stress on the keywords here, repeated, hostile, aggressive, and more broadly, you know, forms of mistreatment towards others. So it's when parties, you know, be it, say, individuals or groups use aggression, unreasonable tactics against targets, and they do so persistently. So keywords here I want to stress, right, persistent and repeated. I think it's also helpful, again, just, you know, dovetailing with George's experiences here, we have seen in the literature, in numerous studies, more overt, explicit forms of bullying. So these are more, say, direct verbal aggression, intimidation, humiliation, certainly insults, anything that's said that's intended to ridicule. But we also have more covert forms of bullying. So these include ostracism, that's ignoring or excluding the target, spreading malicious gossip. I've even seen and heard, you know, from colleagues, subtle pressures towards the targets to not, say, claim entitlements or benefits, right onto, you know, blocking promotion. So those can be construed as tacit forms of bullying. But certainly culture does play a role. And what we do find from the numerous studies is that it's often downward. So some of our listeners might be familiar with this concept of, you know, kissing up but kicking down, right? So there's certainly a very hierarchical aspect to the tendency for bullying to perpetuate in organizations. Interesting, you should mention the healthcare profession, but bullying has also been studied in my profession, in academia. So you have, you know, experts, tenured, really established professors who exploit and they certainly bully those that they are supervising, those that they are supposed to be mentoring. And so if this perpetuates across the different levels of the organization, certainly you will find that, you know, that's going to lead to a toxic environment. Certainly the hierarchical element, right, the clear distance between leaders and followers, the supervisor and the supervisee, what we call authoritative distance, right, between the leader and the followers, that's going to perpetuate, you know, instances and give rise to cases of bullying.
George, did that kind of treatment help you to learn? Did it help you to toughen up as it is, you know, purported to do?
Well, for me, I think it did. In many ways, you know, the whole idea of if you face obstacles, challenges at work, and then you just need to snap out of it and then reset your whole situation. And in a medical setting, especially in surgery, it's incredibly important. And then, for example, I'll give you, you know, if let's say in my workplace, I'm facing some complications from operations, you know, unfortunate mortalities and that sort of thing. And one thing that perhaps probably helped me in some way is that all these pressure, although may not be ill-intended, but what wasn't very particularly pleasant when you were in the receiving end, somehow built some degree of character. You know, I wish it was done differently, that, you know, you are in a more humane, kind way of, you know, counseling and nurturing with that sort of character building. But when you're throwing a deep end to constantly realize that someone is not ill intending in what they do to you. And then so that builds a character of knowing how to get out of challenges when you fall into a hole. So indirectly, I'm not condoning that bullying is a good way. However, in some way, whenever the pressure is put onto you, then you really would know how to get out of troubles. But I keep using the words ill intent. So I constantly assess my position, facing my superior, whether things were done to me with ill intent. And then a lot of time when it wasn't, then I really didn't perceive that as bullying. So probably a bit heavy-handed.
That's interesting, you know. Eugene, does intention have anything to do with it?
I think certainly, right? So George, completely agree with you on that point there. So the intention, if it's malicious, certainly, and it's targeted. And what we do see, again, I'm just pointing back on the literature here, is that if there's an intention for personal gain at the expense of another person's well-being, or say their career progression, then there's an intent of, you know, malice, selfishness. But, you know, certain work cultures, high pressure, if it's a matter of life and death, then certainly, you know, harsh criticism during that particular incident, right, or any of the a major conflict or crisis, that certainly, in some degree, I would say it's not, you know, it's unavoidable, maybe even, I would say, even warranted, right? But I think it'd still be helpful, you know, past that point to maybe follow with a conversation saying that, hey, you know what, this is how things are done in our particular work environment, in our profession. It's a matter of life and death. And so, you know, chop, chop, you know, take action immediately before the situation actually worsens. I wouldn't construe that. I wouldn't, you know, think of that as ill intentioned, right? And certainly if it's a one-off, if it's not repeated, remember the key word here about bullying being, you know, persistent and repeatedly targeted towards that one individual, then I wouldn't see that to be a case of bullying.
What about the recipient? So we've talked about, and I think it seems to be coming from the point of view of the person carrying out these behaviors or treatment, hostile, aggressive, repeated on their part. What about how it makes the recipient feel or respond? Do we look at that as well?
There's a question for, was it George?
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of us could address.
Yeah, I guess, Eugene, you just address it first. I think I obviously have my own kind of like a, in some way, survival strategy when it comes to something like that. But I'm really quite interested to hear what you think about, you know, how someone can be adversely affected by such, aggression.
Yeah, certainly. So we're talking about, you know, the numerous studies, and here we see what we call meta-analyses, right? So these are compilations of numerous studies, and by and large, when we pinpoint and we conceptualize, we understand bullying as aggressive and repeated, you know, actions against their targets. That certainly leads to a whole range of poorer work and well-being outcomes. So we find targets of bullying report both physical and mental health problems, right? From ranging from, you know, post-traumatic stress, certainly burnout, interrupted sleep. There's even a couple of studies showing that, you know, people don't get a good night's rest, right, when they're the targets of bullying. Some of the recent studies as well, I think most fascinating, links bullying with increased risks for cardiovascular disease. And this is on top of all the other usual, you know, bullying associated with absenteeism, though avoiding work does very little to resolve the bullying issue. Long-term effects, right? We're looking at changes in job attitudes, a diminished sense of job security, a diminished sense of self-worth, so negatively affected self-esteem. So increases as well in, you know, feelings of resentment and retaliatory intent, right? Difficulty forming trusting relationships in others. And I think this is all on top of, you know, just changes in more general job attitudes, diminished job satisfaction, and reduced commitment to their work. So these are all, you know, it all seems like bad news. But, you know, just to a bit of caveat there, say if it's not repeated, if it's, you know, with the intention of maybe acclimatizing the individual to the pace, the demands of the work environment, then certainly I wouldn't consider that bullying.
Mm-hmm. Eugene, a lot of things you mentioned, you know, all these adverse emotional well-being can be quite subtle. I mean, in your work, how do you detect those things?
Yeah, so it's not easy. I think sometimes within a certain climate or work environment, people are not willing to voice up, especially if they are lodging, say, think about lodging a complaint or raising this to senior management. There is, I think, sometimes in what we call in these very hierarchical organizations, you mentioned hierarchy a few times, there's a climate of silence, right? So it's this belief that, I'm not going to kick up a fuss or stir up trouble because if I, lodge a complaint towards my superior, I'm going to get in trouble for that, right? So I think, just to answer that question, I think it really depends also on the culture, the environment, the hierarchy, how the work in itself is actually set up, and certainly all the unspoken rules, isn't it, of interactions in the workplace.
There's something definitely that I want to pick up on that when we come back from the break. George, you also have a point you want to follow up on, but let's go for a quick break first for some messages. My co-host, Dr. George Lee, in the studio with me, we're speaking to Dr. Eugene T, Associate Professor in Psychology, and we're discussing bullying in the workplace. Do share your thoughts with us, 03-7733-2900, if you'd like to call us. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Share your thoughts if you've encountered bullying at the workplace or if you have questions. We'll be right back. Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. My co-host, Dr. George Lee, in the studio with me. We're speaking to Dr. Eugene T., Associate Professor in Psychology from HELP University. We're discussing bullying in the workplace. Call us at 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 to share your thoughts. George.
Yeah, well, early on, as you may recall, that I asked Eugene about how to recognize when someone is really suffering, having adverse emotional reaction to being bullied. And the reason why I asked that is because, I myself actually have been in a studio once, probably a number of years ago, as you recall that, we've been doing the show for so many years now. One of the guests that we invited turned out to be my student. And during the whole talk, we discussed the topics and everything. And towards the end of the show, after we wrapped up, and then she came to me and said, "Hi, you don't recognize me, do you?" I said, "Well, not really." She said, "I used to be your houseman." And then I said, "Oh, really?" I was like, "This was in University of Malaya." And she said, I said, "Well, I hope, working under me was okay." She kind of said, "I'm sorry, it was very unpleasant. I just would like to tell you that, at the end of the day, I felt that a lot of the time, the sort of like approaches that you imposed were a little bit aggressive. And then although it wasn't really intended with ill intention or malicious, and then however, she felt that throughout the whole 6 months, she felt very pressurized and a lot of the time needed to actually achieve some degree of perfection to my liking and that sort of thing. And that was the first time I actually had to take back and then reflect on what I do. So earlier on, I kept saying that when I was in the receiving end, and then later on, I didn't realize that when I was the person who perceived to be bullying, then I realized that although it was well intended, but somebody in the receiving end may actually carry on that sort of like a suffering many, many years until she became a consultant. So from that day onwards, I began to, even though I'm teaching now, I intentionally reflect on my teaching method all the time. So constantly be self-aware and mindful of what you say, what you do may have such repercussions. So I quite like to hear Eugene's opinion about when somebody is not aware of the bullier, in air quotes, not aware of what they do. And is that really possible?
So it comes back again to intention, right?
That's
intent.
Right.
What do you think, Eugene?
I think absolutely. I think it's spot on there. George, if I could just maybe follow up on that question, this former student of yours, and just to answer that question a little bit more directly, did you seem to see or observe that she tended to withdraw, or she really had hesitation voicing up? It was only after, like what you said, like 20 years after.
That's right. Nearly 10 afterwards.
Nearly 10, all right. So, reason I asked about that, George, and also to answer that question earlier, Shari, is I think a sense of like, you would be able to, very subtle hint, right? This person sort of removes themselves or is absent from work, probably no coincidence that absenteeism is often associated with, you know, cases of bullying. And like I said earlier, it's not a resolution, right? Because people are just avoiding or escaping, right? Moving themselves out of sight of the bullier or the aggressor. And also, I think interesting you should mention self-awareness there as well, George, because one of the areas, one of the ways or interventions, training that has been suggested, right, to mitigate or, you know, get the individual to be more cognizant, more aware, is indeed emotional intelligence training. Mm. So it's, you know, self-awareness being at the core, at the root of what it means to be emotionally intelligent, how you come across to others, how do you present yourself to others, right? And so in being mindful of the impact that you have towards others by the way in which you conduct yourself and certainly the way in which you express yourself, that's going to be useful. So we've seen some studies tell us that, you know, being mindful, being self-aware, true mm-hmm. emotional intelligence training for one, that can certainly be very helpful. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting that, George, your student perhaps only felt that she was able to bring this up to you when she was a consultant.
That's right.
When she was perhaps more your peer at your level.
That's right. So, you know, when that happened, and then also with recent news expose on a lot of sad cases that has happened in Penang and various things, I did have some sense of guilt that, you know, why did this happen? I tried to come up with excuses for myself, like, you know, it's a big organization, the whole team has so many doctors. And the sad fact was I didn't even recognize her. And towards the end, I actually didn't realize the impact I did on, you know, the impact of such pressure on her. And therefore, although I tried to come up with reasons behind all this and also how I could miss all that, but they were all excuses because there's really no reason to probably make someone feel belittled.
I'm glad. Thank you so much for sharing this, George, and for being so, you know, so humble about it, you know, so modest and, you know, being able to reflect on your experience. But, you know, if we could also unpack a little bit, taking from your former student's experience of being unable to speak up at the time. Now, how do we create an environment, Eugene, where people can speak up? They shouldn't have to wait 10 years during a chance meeting to bring it up, right? And just want to point out, you know, there are several developments recently. The Ministry of Education has launched a portal called Aduan Bully for students facing bullying to report it. According to the task force that looked at the Ministry of Health's work culture, in their report, they pointed out that MOH has a My Help helpline for Ministry of Health staff to report bullying and harassment as well, though, as I understand it, the portal is not actually fully operational. But, you know, there are systems like this, either in place or ready to be rolled out. Now, what elements should such systems have? And do we need to look beyond just a physical hardware of the system to ensure that people can feel empowered to speak up about being bullied?
Big tough question there, Sharik. So I'm gonna also once again, you know, just say thank you to George for, you know, very forthcoming, very honest, very humble sharing that realization, because there is indeed, just can't resist but mention that the more senior people get, the more authority, power, influence, reputation they gain, there is also, you know, increasing deficit towards them being empathetic. So I can understand, right? I went through all this before, but I certainly don't feel alongside what it is that you're going through, right? So George, great job there, being cognizant, being really aware, right, that, you know, the experiences of your former student, right, certainly something that you may have gone through before, but not exactly. And so just to, you know, tie in emotionally with them. Sherry, with your question, I think, you know, the moves and the initiatives being set up by the government, I think that's great, because I think what we want from a psychological point of view is to counter the effects of organizational silence. So because these cases of bullying, instances of bullying tend to occur in between, you know, when there is a great degree of authoritative distance between individuals, you want to create an environment where, you know, people are encouraged, if not empowered, to actually speak up. And just very quickly, what I mean by organizational silence is when, you know, there's an environment where victims of bullies are reluctant to speak up. They don't want to report their experiences of bullying, right? And it's formed by two fundamental beliefs. And it's firstly that, you know, if I speak up about problems with bullying with this organization, it's not worth the effort. And secondly, I think that's it's more telling as well that silence is perpetuated with the belief that when you voice up your opinions and your concerns, that it's dangerous, you're going to suffer negative repercussions from it, right? So what you want with such systems is to find ways, anonymous reporting, I think, you know, off the top of my head, but you want to create a system which, you know, creates what we call a psychologically safe environment. So a healthy work climate where, you know, such complaints, you know, the odd one, right, can be made anonymously in also recognition of, you know, the severity, right, assurances of anonymity. And so if we have the systems in place that will encourage employee voice, again, another term from the organizational sciences, right, the voice can be heard and it will be respected, it will be treated in confidence, the assurance that some action will be taken, right, in response to you know, concerns that an employee raised up, then it's only a way to go. Right. I'm not too familiar with all the systems that you mentioned, but I think underlying it all, this is what we want to do. We want to break that organizational silence. We want to give employees more voice in the service of creating a psychologically safe work environment.
Do you think it's inherently more difficult for employees to feel that they have that voice in professions where, as we already heard earlier from George, you know, in the healthcare profession where it is demanded of seniors to be more hard on juniors so that they can, you know, learn the rigors of the profession?
Short answer to that, absolutely, because I see parallels between what George has described and what you've highlighted with, you know, in academia as well.
Yeah.
We have a caller on the line with a question. Good afternoon, Cheryl. You have a question.
Hi. Good evening. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hi, Cheryl. You have a question?
Yes. Okay. So I'm actually a survivor or victim of bullying back in 10 years ago when I was a young reporter. And I was 23, 24 years old and seniors of 28, 30 years old. So they don't realize their actions when they are doing it. I really disagree that they have to be harsh in order for their juniors to learn the ropes of their industry and whatever the field that they are in. But here's the problem, yeah. A lot of the victims, they are quiet about it because they know that if they complain or they bring it up, it's being perceived as whining. Okay, whining and whimpering, you're a weakling, you know. And more often than not, people will get picked on even more. Okay, and what if the organization itself is complying with that sort of toxic perception and approach towards the idea that there are bullying happening within the organization, so they are averse towards it. And you know they try to refrain from commenting about it. You know, they let things happen, but the impact on that individual, and it will end up to become a cycle. I believe that this is happening in a lot of industries. I come from the media industry, and the media industry is toxic itself. But how to break that, and how do we, you know, start rehabilitating these bullies and reminding them that what they are doing is really wrong? And even if so, do they even have the conscience to admit that? If last, you know, worst come to worst, can we lodge police report against our bullies? That's all, to help others, for the benefit of others out there.
So your question, Cheryl, is basically how do you deal with the bullies who are actually, doling out that behaviour to you at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Effectively and immediately stop. The effect is very adverse. I am a senior today. I've been more than 10 years in the media industry. And the problem right now is I don't see the fact that, I don't see how being harsh towards your juniors can even make them learn. It is insulting the intelligence of another human being. If this is the way you treat other people, right, might as well you think about how you're going to be when you become a parent one day. do you want your child to be treated this way? And this is happening across industries in our developing country like Malaysia.
All right.
Well said.
Thank you so much for sharing, Cheryl. We'll try to address some of your points on air.
Sure. Thanks.
Your thoughts, Eugene?
Wow, great question there, Cheryl. You know what? I think it varies depending on industry as well. I've just recently started up studies in an area called positive psychology. So I'm biased towards thinking that you bring out the best in individuals, right? By encouraging them to focus on their strengths, right? But I heard as well, based on George's rich experiences, that sometimes you got to learn from some of the tougher aspects of the job as well, of what the industry is actually like, right? But I would definitely agree with you, Sharon, saying that if the issue is a systemic one, and it sounds like what you said, it's rife in the media industry, then I would think easier for me to actually say this, but a cultural overhaul almost, right? So encouraging more open lines of communication, ensuring anonymity of reports from bullying, being open to rather than dismissive of such complaints and concerns. All these, right, may be minor, but, incremental small building blocks towards the culture that we want to have define the organization. And certainly when you mentioned the word toxic, I'm reminded of abusive leadership. There's an entire research on abusive supervision, right? And that is problematic, right? Provision of employee assistance programs, mental health support. So it needs to be conveyed from the top down, right? If it's actually, trickled down all the way to a point where people assume that, okay, if I move into this industry, this is how I'm going to be treated. And it's going to be hard, tough love, right? But I'm in a way in agreement with you in saying, Cheryl, that, this is not going to lead to the sustained sort of like development of well-being, certainly not all the gains that we could otherwise get if we also, pay a lot more attention to bringing out the best in individuals. So I think I may be going on here for quite a fair bit. So if the issue, if I understand you correctly, Cheryl, is that if it's a structural one, then we will need to think about clarifying goals, values, what the organization stands for, what kind of leaders that we have, codes of conduct, the way in which we treat others in the company, right? So as to diminish the likelihood of bullying, abusive supervision, toxic work environments, taking hold within a company.
Mm. Is there, I think Cheryl also wanted to know, is there anything that gives guidance on how you deal with a bully at the moment to effectively curtail that kind of behavior?
George, I have some thoughts on this, but maybe I'll pass this to you first.
Okay, right. I mean, Cheryl, thank you for that question. But when you were asking that question, I was reflecting on myself. Let's say, wind back the clock 10 years ago. How would my student approach me that would change my behavior? I really thought that if my student had actually said to me that what you did to me make me feel sad and make me feel very uncomfortable and make me feel don't really enjoy my work, I really think by telling me that, that will just basically seize how I do it, because it's almost like, expressing how you feel and confront that person by doing that. And I think if the person kind of like, reporting it or something like that, you still don't see what you've done. But when you actually have that emotional discussion to feel or to actually experience, to actually feel how that person is experienced, I think you will probably change your behavior. So I thank you, Cheryl, for asking that question. I was just sitting here asking myself, if I turn back the clock 10 years ago, if that came in a complaint forms or something like that, would have changed my behavior? I think the most powerful one is if that student had said to me, what you said to me make me feel, not worthy of my job and I don't enjoy my job anymore because of you. And then I think that definitely will change my behavior.
Eugene, you had thoughts.
Yeah, so just to build on George's points over there, I think informal action, maybe bringing it up to the perpetrator, complaints made directly towards the bully within the organization, if available, right? First recourse in the case of, reporting the experience with workplace bullying. If that doesn't work, that might be followed up with, say, more formal written complaints that might prompt, say, departmental investigations or maybe even grievance meetings, failing which, though, I've heard cases escalate all the way to legal action, resignation from the toxic work environment. Incidentally, I won't name names here, but one example from academia is a well-established, well-known researcher, right? It's been accused of bullying, the research assistants, research collaborators, but it took a while to actually, any action taken towards her because this person was a really, really well-accomplished, well-established, very well-renowned researcher in the field, but it took the efforts of, the entire university to actually, reprimand her. And I think twist in the tail here, shall we, if you're interested, right? The researcher, the well-known researcher, very established researcher, the area of study was ironically in empathy. So I thought that is irony. That is irony. So, well, resignation, toxic work environments, right? I think that seems necessary if the bullying problem in the environment is systemic. And if it permeates all the way across the different levels of the organization, I think it might be, just in the interest of your sanity and your well-being to leave such an environment.
Mm. We'll go for a quick break, come back to read some messages, and also to look at what Cheryl talked about, how victims or targets of bullying would be made to feel weak, that they are whining just by bringing up their grievances. And we can unpack that a little bit as well. My co-host, Dr. George Lee, we're speaking to Dr. Eugene T, Associate Professor in Psychology, about bullying in the workplace. Call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 with your thoughts. We'll be right back, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my co-host, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. We're speaking to Dr. Eugene T., Associate Professor in Psychology, about bullying in the workplace. Call us 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899 with your thoughts. I just want to read out a couple of messages. We've got one here who says, I think a lot of bullying cases, even disciplinary ones, are being swept under the carpet or ignored, especially in government organizations. An anecdotal, a sharing, of course. None to almost zero consequence management. We also have another message. Bullying only perpetuates more bullying because it normalizes such an environment. Sometimes the bully is aware, sometimes not, because they might have been victims of bullying before. Some victims suffer from PTSD and may be scarred for a long time. Organizations would do well to set up a policy against bullying with serious consequences for bullies. And listener, thanks you, George, for your valuable input. And I want to pick up on how targets and victims are made to feel when they do bring up if they have been bullied. Yes, we go back to the definition of sorts that it has to be persistent, repeated, aggressive mistreatment. And despite, being at the receiving end of such behavior, which surely can be obviously wrong, many targets are made to feel like they are the ones who are weak, that they are just whining, that they are not resilient enough. This victim blaming, Eugene, how do we correct that?
Certainly, I think that's an excellent point, right? It's gotten me to think a little bit as well, right? When is something bullying and when is it not? So I think clear guidelines and, policies for identifying when something is a series of actions would constitute bullying. And maybe just to house this in the larger context of what we've been discussing this evening, acknowledgement of power differences, right? I think one of your listeners messaged saying that, yes, bullying perpetuates bullying. And so I think what's going on here is that with these hierarchical power status differences, it makes it seem that higher power individuals' mistreatment of their victims is justified, right? It's just their way of expressing their legitimate power. I'm the authority, I'm the boss. Again, likely cultural reasons for this. The bully might not himself or herself be aware. They might justify it by saying that, oh, this is necessary to get employees to toe the line, fall into order. Maybe even, I think, slightly maliciously simply remind them of their place in the organization. Certainly, all this leads to the normalization of bullying behaviors, where I would think that such acts are not seen as bullying, but maybe at worst, a kind of conflict in between the leader and the subordinate. So the fault lies within the victim because of their incompetence. The boss is justified in his or her treatment because after all, they are the boss. They know better. They get away with such mistreatment, blaming the victim instead of treating them fairly. So it perpetuates one of your listeners said, right, vicious cycle, eventually leading to a toxic work environment. So knowing what is bullying and what is not, and creating those avenues for reporting, right, as and when those bullying actually comes up, need some kind of education as well to you know, individuals in the organization. When is something considered bullying? Really helps to be clear on what would constitute bullying and what doesn't. So repeated targeted aggression, intimidation. This is in contrast with, say, surprise inspection, irregular change to a work schedule, right? So not so. I think we need to be clear on what constitutes bullying before we can, you know, have the proper channels and mechanisms to contain it.
Mm. Is there research that shows that people who have been bullied become bullies?
I anecdotal here again, because I've heard that happening in academia. So supervisors who manage research projects and by way of, you know, how they supervise their own students, I've heard, right? They, in this case, it's an academic version of the apple not falling far away from the tree. So if they were subjected to really harsh, really, you know, strict treatment back when they were research students, they tend to also model or mimic that when they become supervisors themselves. So I don't know of any studies though. I think it's an interesting question. I'm going to look that up after this, but I've certainly heard anecdotal. I've also seen that in some of my research collaborators.
All right. We have Aozan on the line. Good afternoon, Aozan.
Hi, Aozan.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, hey, you have something you'd like to share?
Yeah, my name is Aozan. I'm an advocate and solicitor lawyer specializing in employment matters. Today's topic is so interesting, so that I thought of maybe I can share some thoughts on this issue.
Yes, please do.
First and foremost, we need to know that relationship between employer and employee is based on a mutual trust and confidence. So the employer need to provide a very safe place for employee to work in a company. In the event that there is a breach of this trust and confidence, where the companies, the employer fail to provide a safe place free from this bullying situation, then this employee can take a legal recourse of claiming constructive dismissal. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit technical. This employee need to provide what are the instances, what are the situations where this bullying happened, and then to inform the company so that this company need to take immediate action to rectify those instances, to rectify those breaches. In the event if the company failed to rectify those breaches, then this employee can claim constructive dismissal and then he need to walk out from the company. That is one remedy for how to go about this bullying situation. Because I've seen employees or our clients previously who's been the bullying is very impacted his daily life, social, physical, emotional situation. That is number one. Number two, this employee also can lodge a report to the labor office. Because with a recent amendment of the Employment Act, there are so many protections which is under Section 69F of what we call it discrimination, where if there is a discrimination happen in a relationship between employer and employee, then the labor office can take place. So rest assured, there are laws which protect this relationship of mutual trust and confidence. That's all. Hopefully, it's very insightful to all.
Just very quickly, Aozan. These are recourse that will help the target of bullying.
Yeah.
But how does it help to deal with the bully?
Basically, you need to remember that the middle person between the bullying and the victim is the company.
Mm-hmm.
The same goes to the, if let's say we take a situation of a victim of a sexual harassment, the one who should investigate, the one who should take a remediate action is the company.
Mm-hmm.
And if the company failed to investigate, if the company failed to take a remedial immediate action, then the company will be fined by the labor office.
Mm-hmm.
The same goes to the issue of bullying. Because sometimes, first, the company failed to establish a grievance procedure. So that this employee left in the dark. I mean, this employee do not know where to go or who to report to. So that's why by having this legal recourse so that the company will be on the loop And in the event the company failed to take immediate action, so there is a consequence that this company need to face.
So this holds the company accountable for what has happened.
Correct.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Thanks so much, Olsen.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Any thoughts, Eugene?
No, I think that was something very informative. Once again, thank you, Olsen, for that, for sharing your insights and your experience.
Just want to share a message here. Somebody who has personal experience. Make no mistake, our listener says, it's clear that reference to bullying includes beating, insulting, being thrown office stationery and objects, being pushed at the stairs, and more. That does sound very harrowing. Well,
it's definitely not describing BFM office.
No, I should hope not. But I also want to pick up on what Afzan said, our solicitor who called in, that there's, and I personally had not realized that there is legal recourse that you can take. Probably a lot of employees aren't aware that they have these rights as well.
So employers have to take note, really?
Yes, and our listener who messaged about the personal experiences, they are now a senior and they strive to be nurturing. And we hope that's the kind of cycle that perpetuates rather than the negative one.
Well said.
Perhaps we can wrap up with some final thoughts. Eugene, do you have some final takeaways?
No, I think it's, you know, the responses that we've been getting on the show, I mean, really tells us that this is a pertinent issue. It's worth further discussions. It's also really reassuring to know that there are legal frameworks in place, right? And the organizations themselves, the companies themselves also need to take charge and take note of instances of bullying, because this is really, you know, when it comes down to it, all right, it's the welfare, the well-being, the sanity of the employees that really matters. And so it's great to see that, you know, this conversation has provoked such a positive response, interest from our listeners. So once again, thank you all for, you know, chiming in. But yes, certainly this is something that organizations need to take note of. Mm-hmm. I think more we become aware about what bullying is, I think we are in a better position to actually manage them.
George?
Shall we haven't really talked about solution. I have a solution for this. In the spirit of the Merdeka Day, I think the most important thing is that to be independent of bullying, everyone just try to be as mindful as possible and as nice to each other as possible.
You remember that?
Pass that
message along to your students who will next time be seniors.
I'm glad she didn't call today, because that will really embarrass me.
But thanks, you know, George, for sharing your experience with us. Eugene, for sharing your insights. This has been Health and Living. We've been discussing bullying in the workplace with Dr. Eugene T, Associate Professor in Psychology, and my co-host, Consultant Urologist, Dr. George Lee. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.